racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
And good evening and welcome to another edition of Inside Motorsport. Colin Ford first up with Craig Revell on the other side of the panel doing things. And of course, we've got our man back again, Peter Norton. And we're going to promise this is a GST-free zone. That is, no gearbox selection troubles from any competitor we talk to tonight. So hopefully we'll have some interesting news around the place. Of course, the chief thing tonight is Queensland Raceway Ipswich, where it was round 7 of the Shell Championship Series, GDP Nations Cup and the rest, so some good racing getting up there in Queensland. Peter?
Yes, I think unfortunately though it was the a similar result to what we've seen a couple of times, and talks of parity and that is slipping back into the discussion. Of course, at Canberra we didn't have the parity discussion because they were too busy talking about reverse grids and things like that. But it was quite an interesting day's racing, and of course it was another HRT one too.
That's right, and actually of course they're in a very good position for the championship, particularly as it was Craig Lowndes, who's the key driver today for HRT. But of course, that basically covers the tail for Mark Scaife as well, because it moves Craig further up in the championship and makes things look very, very good for them. Interestingly enough, with the result he had today, Glenn Seaton drops further away, who's sort of like the closest competitor. So it's, as they say, looking interesting for the championship. I'd say basically HRT got largely sewn up. But of course, the other interesting part today is the fact that nobody in the V8 supercar race broke the current lap record, which was set last year by Garth Tander. So that might say something about the condition of the track, because I was actually looking at the results from most of the events, and it appears only, I think, in the Formula Fords did somebody actually get to a faster lap time than what they had last year.
Yeah, I understand they've done quite a bit of work on the track trying to correct the very abrasive nature they had there. If you recall last year, many of the drivers were complaining about the tyre wear and tyres blistering in the heat. So they've done a lot of work trying to blast that and get a different surface on there. And I don't think as many people had problems with their tyres, but it did cause a bit of a detriment to the lap times.
Yeah, actually the only person who went faster in all the events during the day was Stuart McColl in the Formula Ford race. And it's quite like he set a new lap record for the Formula Fords up there in Queensland Raceway. It was only good enough to get him to finish fifth, so obviously the guys in front were going faster, but he's the one who put in the fastest lap on the day.
Yep, sounds like a pretty tough time. Another guy having a tough time up there was Russell Ingall in more discussions with stewards once again.
Yeah, I believe coming out $10,000 lighter in the hip pocket, which is not a nice thing to have at the end of the day.
And 20 points, 20 championship points subtracted from his total as well. Mm. Yes, poor old Russell is always in the wars. I think many of them he brings upon himself, and I think that's the way the stewards see it as well, because that was their final decision that he was to blame in that incident.
Yeah, Russell, I think sometimes he lets the right foot do the thinking rather than the brain.
Yep, and of course Mark Larkham snuck through while Russell was tangling with a back marker there. So yeah, Russell not only lost money, lost points, but Mark Larkham benefited and snuck through to third place in that early heat.
That's the thing. Mark Larkham is one of the guys who actually has been improving greatly this year. He's one of the people that for a while seemed to lose his way. He was having a lot of bad luck, but then this season he's doing much better. You know, if you look at today's results, in race one he finished third, in race two finished fifth, and then in race three finished fifth again. Much better than what he's been doing for some time.
Yes, I remember when he first joined into the V8 supercar ranks, and he tried to bring across some of the open wheeler technology and had some quite remarkable design principles into his Falcon. Very interesting, but he really didn't seem to work for him. He then had to go back to a more conventional approach, but every single race he got into, he seemed to be in the wars smashing into people. But it is fantastic to see him come around. He's particularly professional, and might attend the relationship there is turning into a very happy one, I think, with the positive publicity he's getting now. So well done.
Yeah. The other one who was interesting to see his results during the day was Stephen Richard. Now, his car was heavily damaged in a testing accident down at Winton during the week, so it was a mad rush to get it ready. Again, the usual trick for that team, not doing so well in the sprint races. Greg Murphy was doing better, of course, in race one. He finished 11th, but Stephen, in the recently repaired car, was only able to manage 24th. Then race two, he sort of picked up the pace and finished 10th. And in the third race, again, dropped back down to 13th. So not bad for a car that was fairly heavily damaged during the week. The fellow that I think did have some problems was Craig Baird. He had a few problems during the day, and that hasn't done him any good. Interesting as well to note just the range of people that have been having problems during the day. You know, sort of Cameron McLean had problems in both races, 1 and 2. Paul Morris had problems in race 1. And actually, that's one person who is probably spitting chips at this point in time, because he was due to take delivery of a VT Commodore from the Holden Racing team, but didn't have decided to hang on to that car until much, much later in the season. So he's got to soldier on with his old VS, I think, which has had more hits than Elvis.
Yes, it's turning out to be a season where it's very handy to have a spare car in the garage, particularly with street circuits like Canberra. I wouldn't be surprised if people, when they came to Canberra, they pulled out one of the old cars, fully expecting to sort of leave in a wreck in the back of the yard after the race. And I think for many people, that's how it did turn out. Of course, some of them did get through relatively unscathed.
And one person that was missing from the grid this weekend was Todd Kelly, who was one of the round winners at the GMC 400 here in Canberra. Basically due to a lack of sponsorship to sort of do all rounds, he's had to miss the Queensland Raceway round. But he anticipates he will be back at the Winton round, and that'll be good to see him there, because he's one of those young drivers who actually has got quite a fair bit of future for him, and I'd say we'll probably see more of him during the endurance races.
And while talking about V8 supercars, and of course the mecca of Australian motorsport is of course Matt Panorama and the big race at Bathurst there. And this is not meant to be an advertisement or an endorsement at all, just really a discussion about this product. If you are considering investing in such a thing, please get independent advice. And we're talking about the new motel that they're planning to build across. Yes, it goes across Mount Panorama, goes across Conrod Strait. I just wanted to get Colin's thoughts on this. The track has held its almost religious status amongst Australian race fans, and they're going to build this monstrosity over the track, sort of replacing the big bridge they have at the end of Conrod Strait. Colin, your thoughts?
I think actually it could be very, very interesting, because one of the big problems with Bathurst for a long time has been the availability of accommodation on the circuit, and to have an international class motel and apartments there, it's going to make it very, very attractive for people to go there, and also it'll probably you know, just help make the place very, very good. But anyhow, we've got, I think, somebody waiting for us.
Yes, we do. Chris Nixon is, well, he's still quite busy there in the media centre up there at the Queensland Raceway, but he joins us on the line. And, of course, the GTP once again featuring quite heavily. Mark King on top in GTP, but the Nations Cup had plenty of interest.
Yes, it has. Mark King, of course, took out two race wins today, so that's four wins in a row, if you count his score for Adelaide. So he's not quite overtaken Rickshaw yet, but it's looking like a very interesting second half of the season, Craig.
It has been a great season for you, and the Nations Cup has built upon it, and plus with the magazine, which issue number 3 is out on sale now, has just gone from strength to strength in the production car range.
Well, GTP is enjoying a pretty big year this year with the Australian GT Production Car Championship, the GTP Nations Cup, and as you said, the publication of our own exclusive magazine, GTP Motor Racer, third issue on the stands now, and issue 4 about to come out.
Now, of course, issue 3, again, you've done some good reviews. You've had a chance to get into a few delightful cars, including the Mercedes, the track test of the Honda NSX. Who do we bribe to get this job, Chris?
Well, you've got to work a way at it, I guess, but it's all part of the job. It's all part of making sure that people understand what the excitement is of being able to drive these production cars. They are, of course, fundamentally road cars. They are given very minor modifications in order to make them track-worthy. So there are many people out there who may, for instance, drive an XR6 or a Subaru WRX who wonder how they translate to a circuit racer. We're able to bring in the news on that.
Now, the other interesting thing is that, of course, again, once again, this issue is some great photography, particularly some of the race photos from the Eastern Creek rounds of both the GDP Nations Cup and the GDP Century Battery Series. The guys, once again, doing some great photography for you there.
Yes, we can always rely on the likes of some of Australia's best motor racing photographers. For instance, Mark Orsborough, the main photographer for Auto Action newspaper, Dirk Kleinsmith, who was very well known as Mark's opposite number on Motorsport News, are our two, or have been our two mainstay photographers, and we also enjoy photography from people like John Morris from MPix. So they're well-known guys, and they're doing a great job.
Mm. The great thing about it is they've got such good stuff to work with, different shapes, different speeds, and a huge number of cars on the track. The Queensland Raceway for the Nations Cup, fellas, first time for a lot of them on the circuit.
That's correct, but it didn't stop them, of course, from enjoying a good result. It was the first time, for instance, for Paul Stokel, but he ended up winning race two with his Lamborghini. The day really belonged to Jim Richards. He had 2 second places, but that was enough to, at last, put him into the leadership in the GTP Nations Cup. Jim has a pretty strong points lead now over Mark Noski, who didn't have the best day. And so, as I said at the start of this chat, we're looking forward to a very exciting second season.
Now, one of the other drivers to make his appearance for the first time in GTP Nations Cup is Christian Jones in the second of the Prancing Horse Racing Ferrari 360 Modenas.
Yeah, it sort of rolls off the tongue very easily, doesn't it, to say the second of the Prancing Horse Ferrari F360s. There were four in this meeting, would you believe? Four Ferraris. That's about $1.4 million just tied up in those four cars. Christian finished fourth in race one, and he finished sixth in race two. Pretty fair effort for a guy who's been out of the race car for 18 months or so, and came to this one pretty much at the last minute without any opportunity to test.
Mm. Now, one of some of the cars that have been having problems along the way has been the Dodge Vipers, particularly with their brakes. I noticed this particular round that there's only one of the Dodge Vipers, that of Jeff Morgan, that actually made the appearance at Queensland Raceway. No doubt a lot of the guys are away getting those braking problems sorted out, ready for the next round.
I think you're absolutely right, Colin. They're going to need them at Oran Park, just as they needed them at Queensland Raceway, where there were three hard stops. But it was very good to see that Jeff Morgan's development of the Viper is starting to pay off. Fifth in race one, fourth in race two. Pretty good result for that big car. And that's what the fans want to see. They want to see that Viper up amongst the Porsches and the Ferraris and the Lamborghini, of course.
Yeah, of course, it's one of those cars that obviously once they do get to Oran Park on the Grand Prix circuit there, it'll really be able to stretch its legs down the main straight.
Absolutely, got great big long legs. But not so nimble around the tighter parts of Oran Park, of course. Well, I did want to tell you guys about the Australian GT Production Car Championship today. Two great races, and the best part about it is the competitiveness that's evident right through the classes. There are five classes in GT production, as you probably know, and right through that today, great dices all the way. That's what makes this category of racing so exciting. A grid of almost 40 cars, that is if you combine it with GTP Nations Cup, almost 70 cars entered for this weekend, far and away the biggest group of entrants, almost 40 cars in GTP this weekend, and just great results all the way. Great dices between Dave Wood and Wayne Russell in Class B, the hippie sports touring class. Scott Lodesman was back with his Commodore that he flipped at Canberra, but he still managed to get through the weekend, which was a great result for him. Carol Jackson got up in qualifying yesterday in her Honda Civic to fit the likes of Cosi Calasidis and Nathan Thomas in Class E for the full right four-cylinder touring. She didn't quite make it today, but she said that, or Nathan Thomas told me that she'd given him about the hardest race of his career. So, very exciting day.
Mm. Well, Chris Nixon, thanks very much for the report there on what's been happening with the GT production and the GT Nations Cup. No doubt we'll be looking forward to even more excitement at the next round.
I think it'll be a great round to see those cars at Oran Park in New South Wales on the 30th of July, don't forget that, and we look forward to talking to you after that round as well.
Thank you very much, Chris Nixon.
Thank you.
Well, we go from Chris Nixon in Queensland to Phil Branigan, and the clock is ticking, Phil. One reason you're not up in Queensland is because the veil comes very quickly off the New Look Motorsport News, and we're all looking forward to that.
Yes, that's right. Of course, we've decided to impose GST on the whole country, so that's what we've been working on, and we've actually decided, as long as we're going to charge people more for the magazine, we might as well go to full colour and 100 pages as well. So.
Yeah, well, that's right. We're going to charge you more and give you more. What a philosophy.
Well, we're going to charge you a little bit more, and we're going to give you maybe twice as good a magazine. We've been working on this for probably 3.5 months, and this is the first issue we're doing at the moment. It's looking good. The pages that we've seen so far that have been proofed look pretty good, and we're going to, as Chris Landon said in the last issue, not so much change the old girl, but maybe give her a new set of duds and perhaps a pair of high-heeled spike shoes with quite patent leather. And sorry, what was I talking about?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe last night when we weren't really supposed to be privy to. But, okay, a lot to get through in the next issue. Of course, all the news from Queensland Raceway, where the team has been up there all weekend. And, of course, plenty going on. Magna Core. Mark Webber not having his best run. And I think, Peter, you had the story in front of you there. No, but Mark not getting a result there in the top five, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, the safety car was out. He actually picked up a puncture on some carbon fibre that some French dealer left on the track. And you can imagine what Mark's like, being a man from Queensland, and he's fairly conversive with Australian lingo. Made a stop for a tyre, ran off a string of fastest laps. So you'd have to say that if it was an impressive no score, whereas Bruno Junqueira, the Brazilian who's leading the European F3000 Championship, had an unimpressive no score. He kind of shot himself in the foot and had a couple of spins on the way to coming in about 8th. So no damage was done then, but the bad news for Webber, of course, was Nicholas Manassian winning. So Mark's still 3rd in the championship, but that win at Silverstone's now looking a fair way away, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, and with Bedaris 2nd place, I think Salen's 3rd, Montagny, Inge, and Sarazen rounding out the top 6 from the Magna Cours race. It, well, it hasn't hurt him as much as it could have, but it certainly isn't helping.
No, it's not. And the other news over the weekend, I guess, is a bit of a return to form for McLaren's junior team, the F3000 team, with Thomas Enger and Stephen Sarazen. The MySAP team has been looking like MySAPs so far this year, and after the dominant performance of Nick Heidfeld last year, they were expecting a lot. Thomas Enger finally pulling his finger out, of course, Jordan's test driver. And won't Jordan be pleased to have him as a test driver instead of Mark Webber?
Well, you know what they say, money talks.
Yes, and you know what walks.
Yes. But also, plenty of news from, overseas, with Jason Bright picking up his first win at Portland, and it was a repeat of history at Portland International Raceway, where the rookie, Jason Bright, with Derricotte Racing, winning his first championship race in his 4th career start. Bright led his teammate and pole sitter Townsend Bell across the finish line in 0.354 of a second, whilst Jeff Simmons in a cool roller finished 3rd. So Dixon leading the championship with 56 points, Bright 53, Casey Mears 40, Summons in 36, and then I should have given up at 4. But yeah, Bright.
A foreign geezer finished.
Yeah, foreign, looks like a Mexican in the Mexican Champ Car Series.
Giovanni? Like, yeah, it's interesting because that's the track that gave Paul Morris his best result in the lights when he was racing for Pack West. Bridie, apparently he and Townsend Bell went across the start finish line several times side by side. If anyone out there has got ESPN on Optus or whatever brand of pay television, you've got the ACT.
We don't have it.
You don't have it?
No, we've got Fox Sports. And
you've got a lot of video stores though.
Yeah, but you know what? You can go to Yas and you can get it.
Yeehaw. Apparently, the coverage was really good, and Bridie, of course, drove like an absolute stubborn SOB that he always is. That's what good race drivers do. And Townsend Bell, at the end of the race, went, hey, I threw everything at him, everything I had, the cars were the same, and I couldn't get past. All came down to the start.
Now, as a Melbourneite, and one of the big stories in motorsport news this week, I am going to assume, is that the F1 is not part of Moomba.
Well, yeah, there was a provisional calendar being put out from the FIA from their meeting in Warsaw, of all places. One of the side effects is that they have decided to move Malaysia back to the start of the season, which they perennially do, and that has forced the Grand Prix to be a week before Moomba. That would be the first weekend, I think the 1st to 4th of March in 2001. Now, people are saying, but hang on, you know those monsoons that happen every March in Malaysia, they're going to happen next season. I'm told Melbourne major events may be saying, think about this, guys, because they definitely want a long weekend. I actually had a reader on the phone during the week saying, should I cancel my airfares? And my advice to him was, I don't know. I'm glad I live in Melbourne. But we'll wait and see. It'll be probably 6 or 7 weeks before it's sorted out.
it is one, though, that, well, Melbourne Special Events are putting on a brave face. I did hear an interview with one of your ministers as I was driving in on the ABC, which they were saying how upbeat and how great it is because there's just too many damn things to do in Victoria on Moomba weekend.
Yeah, like go to Moomba, which nobody does anymore. I mean, Moomba's kind of, I don't need to tell you about Moomba, it used to be a great procession, and when I was a youngster back in those gym dark days, it was something you look forward to, and now it's like, oh, Moomba's on. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that thing. Hasn't that died yet?
No, it hasn't.
A bit like NASCAR racing.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yeah, that's my go there.
Yeah. Okay, the other thing about Jason Bright's team, he's got to have a future because his team owner, Bob Dorocott Sr., and Chris Lucas from Lucas Motorsport have both been put on the American Racing Series Incorporated Board of Directors.
Sounds good.
So it means they're not going to disappear quickly, and with his results, there's no reason for Jason Bright to be coming back here as he had to after the Formula 2000, US 2000 year, which was a fantastic year, but he just couldn't he couldn't get the drive he needed to stay.
No, he couldn't, but Jason Bright's incentives acquired some fairly powerful allies, and don't forget that he actually signed an agreement to drive Champ Cars for Carl Hogan, almost said Paul Hogan, before he signed for Dorocott to race Lights. So Hogan is obviously a very strong believer in the Jason Bright franchise and wants him to be in his Champ Car team next year. And there's already talk that perhaps Hogan may run a factory Mercedes-Benz team next year, so we'll wait and see.
Now, other stories I think you will certainly be featuring on is, of course, the Knoxville Nationals over there in the United States, Knoxville, Iowa, and, of course, Brook Tatnall, what a champion he is going to be in Australia when he eventually gets that Australian title under his belt. Fourth in the preliminary race on Saturday, eighth in the preliminary race on Saturday as they build up towards the big Knoxville National event, which takes about 2 weeks to run.
Yeah, it's a real tide, isn't it? It's a real surge. It's like Speed Week. I've never been to Knoxville, Iowa for the Nationals, but I hear tales of road bridges that sprint cars driving through the streets and Speedway personalities and every McDonald's and so on and so forth. And it's great to see Brooke going so well. We know he's a world-class performer. Sometimes he doesn't quite nail it on the night, but if he's ever going to get up on song, he's going to be up for this week at Iowa.
Yeah, you were speaking about road registered sprinters. Well, Leonard Valschott, who has won the Pikes Peak title, which is running this weekend, in everything from stocks to last year in the Mad Max Race Wing Sprinter. He was absent from the final practice session for the race up thus yonder mountain that shall never be scaled, was Zachariah Smith's famous saying when he found Pike's Peak back in 18 something.
Yeah.
They're getting up there in about 40 seconds thus yonder mountain.
Yeah, they're getting up there in about 10 minutes now. Two Holden Commodores competing this year, believe it or not.
Yeah?
In the ASA production car class, which is actually sanctioned by NASCAR, and says any production car that runs a 5.7 litre Gen 3 engine, you can run. So everyone runs Camaros, except for two bright sparks in America, and said, hey Zeke, let's build us some Commodores. So they have. So they've got two left-hand drives, Holden Commodores, ASA sportsman cars, going up the mountain this weekend in Pikes Peak.
Yeah, the interesting thing with the UNS is so heavily committed to IRL, I must say, in all the stuff I've read, I haven't seen the name UNSA there, so...
Well, the UNSA is sort of almost a previous generation now. The current generation, you'd have to say, is almost the Millens, because I believe Rod Millen's son is running this year as well, and who's to say whether Monster Tajima hasn't got any little blokes running around ready to go up there with Dad, so in the 1,000-horsepower, four-wheel drive Suzuki.
That's right. This amazing, amazing event, and is something that I'm sure that your American correspondents, whether it's Phil Morris or one of the others in tow, will certainly cover, because it is part of the 4th of July weekend festival of motorsport right across the country.
Well, I'm kind of hoping Phil's going to be in Cleveland, otherwise we're going to be making stuff up about the Champ Car race.
Hey, that's like us.
Yeah. Penske going for 4 out of 5. What a turnaround. Just amazing, of course, and not on pole position, but Damada and Cassio Neves and Nefera. Oh, just too many Brazilians.
Yeah, well, Mexican, Brazilian, South American auto racing team series, I think it is now, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, and Roberto Moreno, who's sort of half Brazilian and half Australian, he hasn't won a race yet. He's going to kick Rosberg his way to the championship, I think. He might just win one race and win. But what a series. Like the one page in Portland last week, there were five Brazilians in the top five places.
Yeah, and any wonder why Bobby Rahal had to take charge, because that Englishman, Andrew Craig, just didn't know how to make the American series work.
Well, no, he didn't, but he did bump the turnover up from $23 million a year to about 70 in about 4 years. So it hasn't been entirely disastrous.
Yeah, and he's damn well got him racing at Rockingham. Rockingham,
and the
Lawrence
in Germany is 22-day calendar for next year, so...
In fact, at that, what was it, the ring?
Oryx Ring.
They've been quite heavily wooing Mr. Petty and Mr. Barry Graham to bring over the experience, the NASCAR experience over there, and they've been working on them for about 2.5 years now.
Yeah, they're going to have something similar to that at Rockingham.
They've got the contract for that as well.
Yeah, at Corby in the UK, so that'll be something to look forward to.
And there was talk that Barry was going to have a V8 supercar version in Australia.
Yeah, but Barry's he's doing so well running the Petty NASCAR thing in the USA. It's something like 130 cars at the moment spread around 4 or 5 racetracks in the USA. I don't think Barry's going to be too concerned about racing in Australia for some time.
Oh, yeah, but when you've got 2 sprint cars and 4 midgets, you've got to do something whilst you've got a winter vacation over
there.
That's true. All right, now, features, because I guess that's one of the big things with the change in motorsport news. You are going to be able to really highlight a lot more features, and plus pictorial features are going to be a big change with how the new magazine is going to be set out.
Absolutely true. You hit it in one. Motorsport News will still bring you all the news, but we are going to be going a lot more into the features area. Here's a question from one of our features. What was Larry Perkins doing in Queensland for the week before the race this weekend? We have exclusive features. We'll tell you all about it in an in-depth interview in which Larry discusses retirement for the first time.
I hope it's not that swimsuit edition we were talking about last week.
No, we're going for the black label with Larry. We're going to paint the cars black now so they can crash into each other, because wasn't the green paint scheme a great thing in Canberra?
Well, I'll tell you what, they've got a touch of the Walter Lindstrom, haven't they? Ingle bounces it off the pocket and Larry comes in and sinks it.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I don't think Mike Henry's giggling about that. Second feature.
Yes?
We have the first look at a 2001 NHRA Pro Stocker. They're changing the rules over there. Whole new generation of cars coming. No one in the world's seen them. We've got the first pictures. Not even the American publications have had these yet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the second thing. We take you inside the car, which is the car to beat in Nations Cup. Chris Nixon was just talking about it, of course. The Ferrari 360 Modena, Mark Noski's car, Wayne Park, Melinda Price, now Marcus Ambrose. Various people lining up, of course, the Palmer car. We take you inside, show you how the electronic gearbox works, why it will work on some circuits and why it won't on others.
It's going to be one to read. Plus, as you said, all the news. You know, and now a compact take to the toilet on your long public service breaks.
Now, if you want to take anything to the toilet, you can take your opposition.
No, that's for cleaning up, but when you're spending your half an hour in your long public service
break... Oh, okay, well, it doesn't take half an hour to read the opposition, so you can maybe you're better suited with motorsport news.
Phil, it's been a pleasure. All the best with... Thursday, the launch. Hopefully, now you're in a slightly different size, we can actually get them here on Thursdays as well.
Well, that's one of the reasons we're changing.
Because I couldn't get it on time. That's very nice of you.
Well, we want to make a better motorsport news for the readers, and of course, distribution-wise, it also works out better, so we're trying to launch everywhere on Thursday, all around the country. And we look forward to everyone's continued support. The reaction so far has been great. We're not going to let you down. We're going to knock you on your butt.
All right, Phil Bredigan, we look forward to that.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Phil Brannigan joining us there. And, of course, as we said, the new look motorsport news coming out next week. Now, a few topics that we brought up. Of course, we're going to be speaking in depth, Peter, a bit more about the kart championship and a few interviews coming up a little bit later on in the show.
Yeah, that's right. The interesting comments there about the Bobby Rahal as being the new CEO or the stand-in CEO and president of kart. A lot of pressure on them there. The kart organisation is listed on the New York Stock Exchange. They've got the remarkable stock symbol of RPM. What a good surprise that is. And, having the world of Wall Street breathing down your neck puts a lot of pressure on you. And, of course, it's advertised as being the great North American racing series. They're going to struggle in the home market if they've only got 2 US-born drivers. And, we can see that in the qualification.
the qualifying positions and all the results, Brazilians, Mexicans, and everything else. It's going to make it hard to sell, particularly down into the deep south where NASCAR, it's all local boys who have come good.
Yes, and well, one open wheel series that isn't having much trouble attracting interest is the Formula Holden. Brenton Ramsey joins us on the line. Two more races today at the Queensland Raceway, and once again, really showing their stuff quite well.
Yeah, we had two fantastic races out here at Queensland today, and even the qualifying was, again, reminiscent of a Formula One session with Simon Wills taking pole by only 1/100th of a second this time from Christian Metzen. So the qualifying was boding for some good racing, and that indeed eventuated. A race won earlier in today with Simon Wills taking the win, and in the second race, Murchison actually got away with the win. So a win for each of those guys.
Very much a bit of a two-horse battle there at the very front of the field.
Yeah, well, that actually means in the championship now that Murchison has 149 points and Wills has 142 points. So it's still fairly tight, and we've got four more rounds to go.
Tim Lay was a man that I expected to have a really good run-up in Queensland. It looked like he was getting the thing back together in Canberra. Unfortunately, that's not the case, not getting a first or second spot that he'd hoped for.
No, Tim, he just had the worst run of luck you can possibly imagine. He qualified pretty well. He qualified only 0.3 off of Simon's time, which was actually under the existing lap record. So Tim was in a good position, but in race one, he was running third, and then he had an engine problem, and that problem couldn't be rectified for race two, so he didn't even start for race two. So a shocking weekend for Tim again, and he's slipped now to seventh in the points.
Now, one person making a bit of a comeback up there at Queensland Raceway, particularly in race one, was Dale Breed, who finished fourth after a fairly heavy shunt during the week during testing.
Yeah, that's right. Look, Dale's been coming on quite well, and he had a great run in Canberra. They came up here for some testing, NRC, and the boys actually also spent some time out at Hamilton Island for a bit of relaxation, so I think I might be signing up for NRC for a bit of that. But when they came out and tested, Dale did have a shunt, and recovered quite well in qualifying to qualify fifth, and then in race one he actually finished fourth, which was a great result. But in race two, he was battling with Leroy Stevenson for third position, and they came across a lapped car that had actually lost part of its front wing, and I think Dale was running behind Leroy, and he saw his opportunity and came in contact possibly with Leroy, or took to the grass, and they went three wide, and he had a huge shunt at about 220 kilometres an hour into the wall again in race two, and it brought out the safety car. So he obviously didn't finish in race two, but taking avoiding action. So he's come on quite well in the pace, and let's see what he can do at Winton.
Well, Winton being the next round, but of course before then, trackside. Next weekend we'll have all the action from this Queensland Raceway. And on the strength of what we've been seeing, the Tasman Cup Series this year is going to be fantastic. And a little bit later on in the show, actually, we'll be speaking to Barry Green, who just launched a new book about the Tasman Cup Series and, of course, the halcyon days of the Tasman Cup Series down there at Longford. And, of course, that's something that's been revived through Formula Holden and New Zealand Motorsport, and is going along gangbusters.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that that people don't realise is for Formula Holden categories, we've got two distinct series that you can run a Formula Holden in. You can run it in the Holden Australian Drivers' Championship here in Australia, and that's an 8-round series. Or you can run it in the Tasman Cup, which is for the New Zealand Grand Prix and also the Denny Hull Memorial Trophy. So there's a lot of history over there in the Tasman Cup that goes behind that. And it's a great opportunity for the Kiwis to have some local races, and also for the guys here to go over and run in New Zealand. And for Formula Holden, it's fantastic.
Now, looking ahead to next year, where there's actually a V8 supercar race in New Zealand, is there any thought about making one of the rounds of the Tasman Series, one of the Formula Holden support races for the V8 supercars when they go over there?
Well, it's an interesting point. I'm not sure whether they've talked about it, but I think the way that the situation stands at the moment is quite good, because you have your Australian Championship running sort of your March to August, and then in November, December, you have the Tasman Cup. And what that also offers is, by running in New Zealand in that time, it actually offers an opportunity for any international drivers, like drivers from America or Japan that might be looking for some additional seat time to come in just for that standalone series November, December, and get some good time there. So I wouldn't see that we'd be going overseas during our Australian Championship, and I think we'll probably likely to stick to our two-series format with the Australian Driver Championship and then the Tasman Cup in November, December.
Yep. Oh, that's probably a good way to do it then. But of course, as you say, a lot of the overseas drivers do come down and take the opportunity to get themselves some seat time in their off-season. We've actually seen, I think, even some Japanese drivers come down.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've had guys, Akihiro Asai, spent some time in Formula Holden here in Australia and in New Zealand, and also Yudai Igarashi, another guy that came over from Japan who's now running Formula Nippon in Japan. So the guys see it as a good chance to get seat time, and it's obviously quite good value for money when you look at the cost of running Indy Lights or something in America or in Europe. So there's plenty of advantages there for cost, and also you know, it's a great category, and they're really quick cars.
Oh well, only 2 weekends away now till everyone makes the trip down to Victoria, and Brenton, we look forward to catching up with you over the next couple of weeks, and as well, it is going to make for a heck of a finish to the championship. Murchison still out in front at this stage.
Yeah, and it's been a fantastic championship this year. I think the closest that we've seen for quite some time. And I mean, Murchison, as you say, is leading the championship. He's only 19 years old. This guy has really got some class, and he's up against the proven Wills, who's got you know, a championship and 2 NZGT wins to his belt. So it's a real showdown, and everybody should also just check out Trackside this Sunday to see the action from Queensland.
Thanks very much, Brenton Ramsey.
Thanks, Craig.
And of course, in the IRL, there's a lot of talk about it only being a series full of rookies. Well, this weekend, they went to a track where everyone was truly a rookie. They went to Kentucky Speedway for the first time, and the on-pole position is a true rookie. Sarah Fisher was placed first in the qualifying, and Fisher driving the number 15 Walker Racing Cummins Special, the Lara Oldsmobile Firestone. Cop that for a description. She ran the
special. You've got to add special on the end.
Oh, a special, yes, of course. And yeah, this young lady ran the day's fastest lap in the first of the three sessions. Her lap of 218.517 miles per hour came on her 65th lap in the morning practice session. She ran a total of 150 laps, getting in plenty of practice there as they're all learning a brand new circuit. Mm. And also in the US.
In the US, we need to do this one because we're talking open wheel racing.
Yes.
And, well, we had spoken about it with Phil Brannigan, but Peter, you did take a look at the Kart FedEx Champ Car Series.
This weekend, the Kart boys are racing in Cleveland, and on pole position is Roberto Moreno, getting his first pole since 1998, and in a very emotional interview, this is what he had to say.
1988 was enough. That's all, guys. It's the whole road up here. Not by any means finished. It's just the beginning. I was telling Jim McGee, who was the guy that put all the trust in me, that the Moreno from Ages is all coming back to me, and it's all almost there, and it's all starting to come up.
The second place qualifier was Jill DeFerrin, very proudly placing Penske back on top in the kart series, and back where they were after a very long drought without wins. And now they've got their 100th win. They're really back there.
Okay, for the Vision team. I'm very, very proud to be part of this, and I just hope tomorrow we can back out with a good finish.
Well, the momentum continues to build for Roberto Moreno. Into home over.
Fugerman. Flying third was Mauricio Gilgerman, who put in a lot of hard work to get Mercedes their best starting position for the whole year so far.
I mean, I think the whole Marvel team Penske is doing very well. Both myself and Elio seem to be competitive every race we go, but it's important for us not to get our heads in the clouds or anything like that. You know, keep our feet firmly on the ground, tackle each day as they come, because these guys out here, they don't give you a they don't give you much room, you know.
Yeah, you've won here before. Talk about tomorrow, the strategy. It's 10 laps longer than last year.
You know, I haven't spoken in great detail with Roger and the whole team about the strategy yet, so not much to comment, unfortunately.
Well, we'll see a lot from Jill DeFerrin, that's for sure, tomorrow.
And of course, on top of the kart racing series, which people are turning off in droves, what they're turning on to is some good old Southern Pride action.
Yes, that's right. The good old boys were back down to Daytona. We were speaking of the mecca of motorsport in Australia. To me, Daytona is probably equal number one in the US. And the good old boys race at Daytona twice a year, the opening event, and this weekend for the Pepsi 400. And as usual, it came down to a showdown in the last couple of laps, and Jeff Burton was able to take the victory by only taking two tyres in his last pit stop, and he was able to hold off a pack of some of the Wiley veterans to win. It was on the Saturday night, so people with Fox Sports must have spent this morning glued to the set for one of the major events of the year. The Daytona 500 winner from earlier in the year, Dale Jarrett, came home second, with Rusty Wallace third, followed by Mark Martin and Ricky Rudd rounding out the top five.
Yeah, and interesting championship at the moment with, I think, Bobby Labonte, who was leading it coming into Dale Earnhardt. Earnhardt trying to break the record of the King Richard Petty's seven Winston Cup championship victories, but second place in the points, only 100 and something points behind, and I don't know if he figured in the top five there, but Labonte crashed. So that's not good news for Labonte hoping to stay in front.
Not at all. It really is a championship all about consistency. And at this point of the series, we've only got a few drivers who have had two wins. Most of them only have one. That's how even and open the field is. And I have to say, at the beginning of the show, we spoke about being a GST-free episode here tonight. Of course, we didn't mean it would be a glitch-free episode.
Very funny.
Craig on the buttons there, as usual.
Yeah, everyone's a comedian, aren't they? But, Colin, whilst we're talking to Dan quite quickly before we go to Jonathan Ledyard and the BBC for his report on the Formula One, we do need to have a quick chat about the rule changes at the British Touring Car Championship, which of course will flow on here into the Australian Super Touring Car Championship.
That's right, and just quickly, I think it's two. We mentioned that last weekend we were looking at Croft. Rickard Rydell won both races there ahead of his teammates Anthony Reid and Alain Menu. So Ford Mondeo.
Ford Focus, wasn't
Ford
it?
Ford Mondeo's dominate. But yeah, they've announced new rules for the British Touring Car Championship, and they're basically doing what we call Back to the Future. And it'll be a low-tech, low-cost formula, which harks back to the most successful years of the championship, which was in 92 and 93. Part of this is the concept of having all cars using standard components from a single source, and all cars of a particular model will have to use a kit of standard parts from a single preparation firm. So essentially what it means is that if you're going to run a particular brand or model of car, you have to get it from a particular car preparation firm, and all the bits and pieces in terms of your gearbox, parts kits and so on will come from them as well. So what we're looking at is having part kits. Kit 1, which must be used by all cars, includes a gearbox, wheels, brakes and diffs. So everybody will be running the same gearbox, wheels, brakes and diffs no matter what model car you're running. And then kit 2 is that all competitors must use using a particular model car, must use a manufacturer-nominated body shell, major and engine parts and aero kit. So that's going to be very interesting. They've also approved as part of that for large two-door cars like the Vauxhall Astra Coupe and larger hatchbacks like the Ford Focus to be allowed in. And that's interesting because the fact is here in Australia, the Ford Focus will be introduced into the Australian market later in the year, so it might be very interesting there. And the thing is as well, the engines are going to be limited to 270 brake horsepower with an air restrictor, and they'll allow a new standard body shell but modified for durability and safety with wheel arch extensions to allow larger wheels without the need to modify inner arches, and a neutral, that is ineffective, aero kit. So lots of slipping, lots of sliding, and basically back to the good old days as it was before the cost and aero kits and things went out of control.
Yeah, well, Peter, this isn't the only change in body shapes, because the World Rally Championship is about to see a new Mitsubishi, hopefully some more of those shove-your-face ads as well.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun? That's right. Mitsubishi, who have won the World Championship for the last 4 years in a row, really battling to stop the fifth sliding away from them this year. Their lead driver, Tommy Mäkinen, of course champion so many years in a row, we're almost losing count. He seeded the points lead for the first time in over a year earlier this season. After he won the season opener in Monte Carlo, he has now struggled to keep on terms with series leader and his former teammate Richard Burns. Tommy, the four-time World Rally Champion, has retired four times so far this season, and he now trails Burns by 15 points, and he's currently about fourth in the point standing. However, Mitsubishi are trying to fight back, and they're releasing a new version of their Lancer Group A car, and it's undergone some successful testing in Finland, and they believe it'll launch them back to the top of the World Rally Championship, which is interesting because they've stuck to the Group A rules rather than Subaru and Ford pursuing the WRC kit car version. So it, in some respects, hasn't been a battle of equals, and it's been remarkable that Mitsubishi have stayed on top this long.
Well, I'm sure one man that would love to see a few more of these cars competing in the World Rally Championship down here in Australia is Matt Waddell. And, Matt, this weekend the Australian Rally Championship was up in Coffs Harbour.
That's right. Good evening, guys, and a very interesting weekend too. First time we've in a long time we've seen a Group N car in this time in the hands of Ed Ordinski actually come through and take the round win. So an action-packed weekend with some really interesting results.
Well, Mitsubishi, we were talking about there just a moment ago, and we'd love to see Ed make the move up to a great Group A car, because then it just would put the wood a bit heavier on Possum Bourne and on Neil Bates.
Look, certainly, if there's one thing you could pick that would really spice up the Australian Rally Championship, Super Series, and hopefully getting some top drivers competing with the best at Telstra Rally Australia, it would be to get someone like Ed, a seasoned campaigner who knows what he's doing, who's been around the track since one of these cars, and I'm sure he's eyeing one of those off right now.
Now, one thing I've said all too often on this show is Neil Bates having real dramas at an ARC round, and unfortunately no change this weekend.
No change this weekend. You really have to feel sorry for Neil, boy from Canberra. He's managed to come through and pull out a heat win today in heat two of the event and walk away with some points. But yesterday, bad luck again, towards the end of, I think it was stage six, went over a bridge which had been installed on the stage new since last year, popped the Corolla World Rally car up in the air, and it landed quite heavily on its nose, pushing the radiator back onto the engine block. Lost all of the fluid out of there, of course, and with a choice between continuing and cooking the engine or saving it for heat two and some points, he did the right thing and chose to withdraw, but not very happy about it, obviously.
Now, Neil wasn't the only driver that had that happen to him, and though Possum Bourne also found the same problem, but not to such dire consequences.
That's right. Possum was caught out as well by this bridge. I think it was a bit of a surprise for the leading drivers, but the speeds were up incredibly so this year. We're talking about on some stages times that were between 20 and 30 seconds on the longer stages, faster than last year's time. So definitely caught out by some changes to the course. Possum's car, he felt, flew through the air a little bit better. He certainly said he had a hard landing, but the extra wheel travel on the Subaru Impreza World Rally car enabled him to continue on after quite a hard landing, whereas for Neil it was curtains on heat one.
And, well, does that affect Possum's charge next weekend over to New Zealand? Because, like, obviously, he would be running with a preferred car here in Australia. He wasn't planning to ship that one back to next weekend's WRC event?
My understanding is that he actually is planning to do that. The car's actually on its way to get on a boat somewhere early tomorrow morning to head across the Tasman to New Zealand. Yesterday in Heat 1 wasn't Possum's major problem. He actually had a major incident today which will be causing him some more worries. In Stage 4 today, the longest stage of the day, he had a high-speed spin, banged the front end of the car and the back end, broke a front control arm and a half shaft. That later severed the brake line, and he ended up driving through a couple of the stages today with only the handbrake for retardation effects, as they call it, when there are no other brakes available. So there's certainly some work to be done on that car before it makes an appearance in Rally New Zealand. Not what Possum would have been looking for only 2 weeks out from the World Championship event over there.
Yeah, that's right. And, of course, with Ed Ordinski going outright on us, it is obvious to me that he took the Group N on us, which is probably as surprising as it is to have a Group N driver win. What's more surprising is it's not Cody Croker.
That's right. Cody's won up until today, if my memory serves me correctly, he'd won all five previous, well, he'd won five consecutive heats of the Rally Championship Super Series this year. Ed has been getting progressively closer as he's been dialing in his new Mitsubishi, and on heat one yesterday, the pair finished only 5 seconds apart, with Cody getting the wood on Ed just at the end of the day there. Cody knew he was going to have a battle today. Unfortunately, Cody hit a rock on the second stage of the day today, which managed to take out third gear. The mechanics were able to change the gearbox at the next service, but in doing so incurred a 1 minute 37 second penalty, from which he was unable to recover, and Ed's gone through to take the win, and that actually closes up the Group N championship markedly, from almost sort of 20 or 30 points between the two of them to less than 10 points now, with only two rounds to go in the championship.
Right, and the championship moves on to where?
After this, we go down to Melbourne for the Rally of Melbourne, and that's at the end of August.
Oh, the new WRC event.
Rumours abounding. I'm sure the teams will be looking at the roads quite closely to see just what could possibly be included in a WRC event if it runs over to this side of the country from Perth, of course.
Yes, that's right. And, of course, everyone will be staying focused to Channel 10 for the coverage of the second day's action at Coffs Harbour. And, of course, what sort of coverage will we be getting back on this side of the ditch of the New Zealand WRC event, do you know?
I don't have that right in front of me, but I understand we'll be able to see it on Channel 10. Your listeners will have to check the local guides there, obviously.
Oh, you just wanted to say check local guides, didn't you?
I did.
All right, then. Hey, Matt, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you once again here on Inside Motorsports, and, of course, the point standing, well, perhaps Neil didn't get the points back he wanted, but he didn't lose as many as what he thought.
That's right. One final point. There's only 16 points in it now, and with the new scoring system as for the Australian Rally Championship this year, it means that both Neil and Possum will choose to drop this round from their points calculations completely. So with Possum claiming round one of the series and the guys claiming a win each in Heat 2, if Neil can go on and register two wins next season, they'll go into the final round of the series dead level, tied on points, which it would be a fantastic result. So, still nothing in it with three rounds down.
All right, Matt Waddell joining us there from Coffs Harbour. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Craig.
Also, in the wonderful world of rallying, we've got an international event coming right through Canberra's back door. And, of course, we're talking about the marathon London to Sydney rally. And the latest results from their overnight stop on Saturday night in Wagga, of course, this rally has been a battle between really four teams. And really battling between first and second has been Hannu Mikkola in the Ford Escort and Stig Blomqvist in the V8 Capri. And unfortunately, Hannu has had all sorts of problems, losing his electricals in a water crossing, and he's effectively out of the running, leaving Stig to lead the rally quite comfortably now. In second place is French lady rally driver Michelle Mouton, who really lit up rallying a couple of years back in the Audi Quattro. She is second by about 7 minutes and 40 seconds, and in third place, one of our local heroes, Rick Bates. He's third by a further 4 minutes and 42 seconds. He had a bit of an off in one of the last stages in Thailand, stuck it into the shrubbery a bit, and has spent a few days trying to repair various things, including gearbox and electrical, but it looks like he'll be fairly well placed for the third placing there. Now, if people want to get out and spectate and see some of this, the very final stage of this marathon event is here in Canberra, and it's Tuesday morning. It's the Green Hill stage, and if people want to know where that is just off the Tuggeranong Parkway. There's an underpass on Lady Denman Drive that leads into the forest. Any good rally fan will know that spot pretty well. If you go up in there, the T intersection, turn right, follow the arrows, and the first car will be Tuesday morning at 8:16. And the final car should be coming through at about 9:56. So use your flex time, get out there and cheer on the local heroes in this quite mammoth event. And if you want to see the cars at service at all, on Monday night, I've had mixed reports whether they're at the Hyatt or at Ridges. They should be there doing some service from about 3:30 in the afternoon. So get out and see these quite remarkable cars.
So you're telling me the London to Sydney concludes in Canberra?
The final competitive stage is here in Canberra.
It's like the Paris to Dakar now goes down to Cape Town, isn't it?
Something like that. So if you damage your car in the Green Hill stage, you've got a three-hour drive to get to the Sydney Opera House for the ceremonial finish, hoping that it all hangs together.
All right.
And hope you don't get done by the boys in blue with a speed camera between Canberra and Sydney. But this weekend...
Sounds like someone got a speeding ticket back from Warren Park then.
No, I've got a clean record, thank you very much, that's good. just the fact that being ski season, the boys will be out in force as always, which is a good thing, because I do see some people do some stupid things on that road at occasions. But this weekend, of course, we go to Magny-Cours for the French Grand Prix, where once again it's Michael Schumacher who's been proving to be the class of the field ahead of David Coulthard and McLaren. David Coulthard had big problems during qualifying, jumping from his lead car into the team's spare car, at one stage qualifying a car which had the name Mika on the side pods. Really helps confuse the fans. But of course, the report, as always, comes from Jonathan Ledger of the BBC.
McLaren's plan was to give Coulthard peace of mind with a new contract. What he needs above all this afternoon, though, is a car that doesn't break. Qualifying was a mechanic's nightmare, a never-ending catalogue of running repairs. And 12 months ago, Coulthard charged off into the lead, only for his McLaren to crack after just 10 laps. Schumacher's 22-point lead already looks ominously impressive, and with Barrichello buzzing around one of his favourite tracks, McLaren need their men and machines to be on their mettle, particularly if rain descends as forecast. Coulthard and Häkkinen have never won here. Schumacher's chasing his fifth win in 7 years, and that would equal Ayrton Senna's total of 41 Formula One victories.
It's not a circuit I'm particularly in love with, because the nature of the circuit is when it's hot, it's very slippery, and it's quite long, and I wouldn't say it's much fun driving. And when it's cold, yes, in winter time, sometimes we come here testing, it's a great circuit. When it's summer, it makes it, it is a bit boring, but obviously it was good enough for me so far.
Mm. And of course, the grid for tonight's French Grand Prix at Magny-Cours. Michael Schumacher on pole in the Ferrari from David Coulthard and the McLaren Mercedes. In the next row of the grid, sitting in third position of the grid, Rubens Barrichello in second of the Ferrari, with Mika Häkkinen in the second of the McLaren Mercedes. That's going to be interesting for the start. Sitting right in behind them, the other Schumacher, Ralf Schumacher in the Williams BMW, with Eddie Irvine, probably one of the best results there for qualifying for Jaguar. Seventh on the grid, Jacques Villeneuve in the slowly improving BAR Honda, with Heinz-Harald Frentzen in the Jordan Mugen Honda out of eighth on the grid, with his teammate Jarno Trulli right behind him in ninth. Jenson Button leads out of 10th position in the Williams BMW, with Johnny Herbert 11th in the second of the Jaguars. Then it's Mika Salo in the South Petronas out of 12th, Pedro De La Rosa in Arrow Supertech 13th, Giancarlo Fisichella from the Benetton Playlife 14th, Pedro Nunes in the second of the South of Petronas 15th, Nick Heidfeld in the first of the Prost Peugeot 16th, Alexander Wurz in the Benetton Playlife 17th, Jean Lacy in the Prost Peugeot 18th, Ricardo Zonta in the second of the Bauer Hondas, way down there in 19th place. Jos Verstappen a bit off the pace, obviously having some problems in qualifying, the Arrow Supertech 20th. And then the two Minardi Fondmetals of Mark Sheen and Nader Khan, 21st and 22nd. And apparently they had a shocker of a qualifying session.
Well, the Jaguar was not doing... well, they're probably doing as well as they had hoped, but they would have liked to have done better. In Cleveland, though, a Trans Am Jaguar XKR 1. Paul Genitolisi, or whatever, how do you say it? Come on.
You've got the king in front of you, I've got no idea.
Oh, you would have heard his name a few times over there in North America. Genital.
Don't get that one wrong.
Genitolisi. Yeah, that's not
Genitolisi.
Something like that, you're getting close. Anyway, he took out the win in the Jaguar. And I just think a Jaguar in a Trans Am race is just fantastic. Johnny Miller took out second place in a Corvette, and Brian Simo in a Mustang. Well, this says Mustangia, which might be the Mexican version, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But took out third place in the Trans Am series. Of course, that's one of the longest running series in North America, the Trans Am series.
Mm. Actually, just well, I think of it as well, in terms of GT racing, etc., Le Mans, one of the things that happened after Le Mans was running... Audi's still 1-2-3, but
someone got pumped.
Dick Barber, his Dick Barber Racing GT Porsche, was excluded after the race when they found that the fuel tank was slightly over the 100 litre limit. Barber claimed that temperatures experienced across the race and the rig is subjected to it by 22 refuelings in 24 hours affect the capacity of the cylinder, essentially, you know, just because it's so hot it expands the tank.
Yep,
but as it was, Barber accepted the judge's decision, and as a result, that elevates the Japanese Tyson team to be first in this class and moves the Skaia Racing, which is the Australian back team, to second in the GT class. So very good for them.
All right, then. So as we get set to turn things over to our very good friends, King Cut and the boys on the AFL, after another fantastic Carlton win, and I guess St Kilda having a win, Paddy has decided to actually make an appearance here at Triple S this week. But tips for Magny-Cours tonight.
Schumacher. Schumacher.
All right, and I've got Johnny Herbert, just because it's a GST pre-weekend, as you said.
Yeah, that's one of the problems we've been having. But, of course, next weekend is the next round of the BOC Gaster Super Touring Championship at Oran Park, this time running on the long circuit.
Gee, they love that place, don't they?
And they'll be back with the future tourers, again, with a much larger field of future tourers. And apparently this may also see the debut of the Magna future tourer that they've built at this event. So that could be an interesting one. Again, they'll be supported by the Daewoo Challenge Row Wheels Commodore Cup, and I think a couple other
Formula 2, Formula 3. What has worked for them really well is, of course, the trucks. Double billing with the trucks has been a fantastic thing for the crowds there. And the other thing that I'd love to see, because I think next weekend we go under lights over at Snetterton.
Snetterton, that's correct, on Saturday.
Yeah, that would be another thing that works well, because the NASCAR races that I know Jim Patterson and I went to at Oran Park were just fantastic events.
Mm. I think it's one of those things that they'll look at, particularly when they come to the summer series, because of the daylight savings. It means that effectively they can give
twilight
up,
races.
They can do twilight races. They'll go till 8, 9 o'clock, at 10 o'clock at night, and it'll be really, really good. That's one of the things I think they're really looking forward to. And of course, with the new rules finally decided, the cars are going to be much cheaper. I think we're probably going to finally see a bit of a resurgence in super touring in Australia.
Oh, good news there. All right, Peter and Colin, thanks for coming in and joining us once again here on Inside Motorsport. I apologise to everyone who was hanging out for that Barry Green interview about the Longford book that's just been released. We'll hang that over till next weekend, but I will tell you now that Duncan at the Checker Flag Motoring Bookshop is taking orders for it. So get your order in, and then you can hear all about it next week.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.
The championship starting in February 2001 if they have a minimum of 10 drivers registered to enter. If they do, they'll have rounds in the Rally Catalunya, the Acropolis Rally, the Nesti Rally in Finland, Rally San Remo, the V Rally Tour de Course, and the Network Q Rally of Great Britain. And Mitsubishi are also still looking for the reasons for the hub shaft failures that ended their host victory on the Acropolis Rally. The shafts, which were produced in Japan, not Rally's Rallyouts Rugby England HQ, and the whole batch have now been removed from circulation. So I'd say that'll be a bit of soul searching to see what went wrong with those particular components.
We might quickly, just as we're wrapping up here on Inside Motorsport, we might quickly go to our very good friends at the BBC for their wrap up of motor racing, well, from last weekend.
Next to Montreal, where Ferrari secured a 1-2 finish at the Canadian Formula One Grand Prix, Michael Schumacher consolidated